Job chapter 30. Tonight, if you will turn to that chapter, we'll continue our study as we continue to look at the life of this man. Last week, we remembered the past. He kind of gloried back in the past, and now he will come back to the present. He'll compare the past with what he deals with in the present. That's what we're looking into tonight. The past was, in his words, great. He looked back at it as really something. So just almost the opposite as he looks at the present, as the worst. We all have the tendency to exaggerate things. If it is good, we build it to be bigger than it really is. If it is bad, we do the same and we make it look even worse than it really is, don't we? That is why we need the Lord close in our relationship. We need to draw close to Him so that He might balance out our walks. So let's get into this. But now they mock at me, verse 1. Men younger than I, whose fathers I disdained to put with the dogs of my flock. You know, the beginning of this verse where it says, but now, that signifies to us, that signals to us that he was switching really to the present from where he was talking at in chapter 29. In the last chapter there, Job spoke of how the kids showed great respect for him. Remember that part? When he was coming down the street, they'd see him afar and they'd say, oh boy, here he comes, and they'd get out of the way. They'd go hide because Job had so much respect. But now they're mocking him. And Job says, those kids that are mocking me, they're so bad, and it's no wonder that they are doing such things, because I wouldn't even have hired their fathers, he says here. Their parents were bad, so what can you expect, Job says. Verse 2, indeed, what profit is the strength of their hands to me? Their vigor has perished. They are gaunt from want and famine, fleeing late to the wilderness, desolate and waste, who pluck mallow by the bushes and the broom tree roots for their food. They were driven out from among men. They shouted at men as at a thief. They had to live in the cliffs of the valleys, in caves of the earth and the rocks. Among the bushes they brayed. Under the nettles they nestled. They were sons of fools, yes, sons of vile men. They were scourged from the land. What he's describing here is the type of young men that these guys were, that mocked him. They were the low ones of the society, he says. The rascals, the scoundrels. They mocked me, he says, because they have no use for me any longer, now that I'm in the condition that I'm in. In verse 9, and now I am their taunting song. Yes, I am their byword. They abhor me. They keep far from me. They do not hesitate to spit in my face. You know, there are a lot of troubles in the news that we see today with gang violence. I was just listening to the news tonight. They've had some shootings last night up in Portland area, a couple people shot and possibly killed. And you know, a lot of it is younger and younger people. These were 13, 14-year-old kids that done this, and they have become more and more aggressive. The younger they are, the less fearful they are. They have no respect. They don't care. They value life with little. And Job here is recognizing that side of society. They're taunting him. He says, now I am their toy to pick on because they have no respect for me and the condition I'm in. Spitting in one's face in those days, and culturally, was a very bad thing. It was a very strong sign of disrespect. It still is. If somebody spit in my face, I wouldn't respect them very much. because he has loosed my bowstring, verse 11, and afflicted me, they have cast off restraint before me. At my right hand, the rabble arises. They push away my feet, and they raise against me their ways of destruction. They break up my path. They promote my calamity. They have no helper. You know, God had allowed this to come upon him, and he saw it that way because it was God that did it, as far as he was concerned. It was God that allowed all this. And on top of that, Job looked at it as all restraint was let go, and even the evil people were attacking him, coming against him. But where Job missed it was that it was Satan at work here. It wasn't God. It was Satan at work, and Job didn't even know it. He was actually being honored by God to share in the fellowship of his sufferings. You know how it is when Paul expressed in Philippians chapter 3 the fellowship of sufferings of Christ. You know what that is? Where we share in the sufferings that he has gone through. The power of the resurrection was one thing, but the power of the fellowship of suffering is another. Being conformed to his death as Christians. Identifying with suffering as he suffered, and being restored in fellowship in likeness of him. Though sitting in an ash heap, Job, he'd been promoted in the highest possible way. He was suffering, and he was proving his worth to God in the kingdom. Because God had challenged, well, maybe not challenged, but he had said of Job to Satan, hey, this guy won't forsake me. Oh yeah? Wait, you just take his hand off him. You take the covering around him. You take away his stuff. And I'll show you, he'll turn tail and run. He'll discount you in a hurry. Job never did do that. Although we're going to see, and we have seen, some of the flaws in Job. He wasn't sinless, was he? But he didn't turn tail and run from God. He didn't discount his God. They came as broad breakers, verse 14. Under the ruinous storm they roll along. Terrors are turned upon me. They pursue my honor as the wind. And my prosperity has passed like a cloud. And now my soul is poured out because of my plight. The days of affliction take hold of me. Have you ever been in a situation that it just seems to overpower you, kind of like when you go over to the Oregon coast, if you're brave enough to go swimming in that cold water, the waves coming in, and have you ever been sucked up in a wave? It just kind of, man, it just rolls you up, and there's no figuring out whether what is up or down. You know, it's kind of like what he was describing here, his feeling. He was just being overpowered. He says, my bones are pierced in me at night, and my gnawing pains take no rest. You know how it is when you have the flu, like Bev is struggling with tonight. You ache all over. Your bones even ache. I don't know if it is actually your bones. We say that. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. I don't know. But you feel like it is. Man, it aches right to the core of your being, and there seems to be no relief. This is what Job is describing here. Verse 18, by great force my garment is disfigured. It binds me about as the collar of my coat. He has cast me into the mire, and I have become like dust and ashes. The word garment here actually can be translated and probably refers to his skin, which covered his body, and it was covered with what? Boils. So it was totally discomfortable for him. I cry out to you, but you do not answer me. I stand up and you regard me, but you have become cruel to me with the strength of your hand you oppose me. You remember who he's addressing this to? God. Keep that in mind as we go through this. God doesn't answer him. And it is God that is afflicting him in his opinion and his short-sightedness. And that's the way Job looked at it, period. He's like a student trying to get his attention of his teacher. His teacher's ignoring him. You know, and he's waving his hands, hey! You know, here's what's happening to me. You lift me up to the wind and cause me to ride on it. You spoil my success. Verse 22 there, he said, Lord, you're just lifting me up into the eye of the tornado, and it's about to rip me to pieces. Don't you care? You have spoiled everything in my life, he's thinking. For I know that you will bring me to death and to the house appointed for all living. Surely he would not stretch out his hand against a heap of ruins. If they cry out when he destroys it, have I not wept for him who was in trouble? Has not my soul grieved for the poor? But when I looked for good, evil came to me, and when I waited for light, then came darkness. The house appointed to all living is death. That phrase that we just read, that is really talking about death. Job was faithfully helped, or he faithfully helped others many times in his lifetime. But nobody'd help him now. You ever been in that place where you're beat down, you're tired, you've been working over and over and over, and you look around, man, I've helped lots of people, where's my helpers? That's where Job was. They wouldn't weep with him, or they wouldn't even touch him. He was treated like a leper who might contaminate them, or like a condemned man whom God meant to destroy at any moment. It just wasn't wise to get too close to this Job guy, so they just kept their distance. Where were the people that Job had helped in the past? I've asked myself that. He was a great helper before all this. Surely some of those folks would have wanted to show their appreciation by encouraging their helper in his time of need. I want to always remind myself of that. When I see others suffering or hurting, sick, I want to try to reach out. I was talking to one of the couples that we've helped here recently in the church. We took some food over to them. That person came up to me and told me, you know, I'm an old Christian, been in churches a lot of years, and what you guys did for me and my husband the last week has been the first time a church has ever reached out to us that way. I was blown away. I thought they all did that. But nobody came to his aid, he says. It's not unusual when people go through tough times that they stay away. You know, it's not easy. We're uncomfortable when someone's suffering, when you're really sick or you're really healing. It's hard, but you know, we need to stretch ourselves when people are hurting. We need to reach out and let them know we care. I've been trying to get over to Marilyn Baxter and see her. She's all home now and getting healed up, but man, I've had this cold and I don't want to take anything over to her, but man, we need to remember those that are away from the church for a time. We had a couple that came in and we just, you know, barely knew them. We try to, it doesn't matter if you came here once or, you know, don't come here. We want to help those that are in need. I called the resource center and told them, hey, we've got a lot of food in the bank now. And so, you know, if you have some folks, send them our way. And she was so overjoyed. Thank you. And put us on a list. And that's neat. You guys responded very well. We've got a lot of food in there. My heart is in turmoil and cannot rest. Days of affliction, verse 27, confront me. I go about mourning but not in the sun. I stand up in the assembly and cry out for help. I am a brother of jackals and a companion of ostriches. My skin grows black and falls from me. My bones burn with fever. My harp is turning to mourning and my flute to the voice of those who weep. Boy, what a sorry state, huh? Hope is the best possession a person can have. Those who are without hope are really the wretched of life. I just heard a story of a pastor that his congregation didn't treat him very well. And as the story goes, he left the church, or they asked him to leave, one of the two, and he ended up dying just shortly after that. That's sad. But it happens all the time. We need to be concerned with others and really be people of mercy and grace. Loving. That's who we are to be as Christians. That is why the cry from our Statue of Liberty goes like this. Give me your tired, your poor, the wretched refuge of your teeming shore. That's the cry of a non-Christian nation to the world. When people lose hope, they are reduced to the lowest of human life. Job was there. And even the Lord seemed not to care. To him anyway. Job's body was weak and it was feverish and his skin was black with disease. Boy, I've got this picture of Job. Oh, ugly. In the past, Job's words had brought encouragement to so many people and hope to many, but now his words were like the howling of jackals or the moaning of owls and ostriches. What a scenario. Because his hope was dead. Job's song was like a funeral melody. He was sick. He was at a great loss. But may I say, he had done something very dangerous. And I want us to pay attention to this. He had let pride into his life. And that's all that he saw was his plight, his situation, his sickness, his loss. Now that may seem a little tough on Job, I know. But as we will see, it is this self-centered, total concentration on his problem only, and his view that God did not care, that Job was sinking further away from reality. In order for us to live right, as human beings, with a right and clear relationship with God, we must keep our focus on Him. No matter what comes our way in our lives. Because that really is the test of our faith as we go through tough times, sick times, despair and loss. Many, many times, and I was talking to the guys in OSP last night, even in their trials, which can you imagine? A guy that believes he didn't do the crime and he's, you know, gets many years in prison in a very hostile environment. That's a test of your faith. That's a test that will really cause you to look very squarely in the mirror, as James talks about. Let's get into chapter 31. He continues, Job, he changes a little bit here. He says, I have made a covenant with my eyes. Why then should I look upon a young woman? Job mentions three specific sins that could trip up any man. In the three sins we're going to see in the first four verses, then the first four verses will be the lust part of it, and then deceit in verses 7 through 8, and then adultery in 9 through 11. Now, first of all, lust is the first step towards sin. And sin is the first step towards death. James chapter 1, verse 13, he says, "Let no one say when he is tempted, 'I am tempted by God.' For God cannot be tempted by evil, nor does he himself tempt anyone. But each one is tempted when he is drawn away by his own desires and enticed. Then when desire has conceived, it gives birth to sin. And when sin, when it's full grown, brings forth death. Do not be deceived, my beloved brethren." Job here says that he's made a commitment to not take that second look, that second longing look that would allow temptation to enter in. And this is good advice. It's good advice for us guys. But it's also good advice for women too. They're not exclusive in this. Remember Potiphar's wife? It was lust that she got caught up in. For what is the allotment of God from above and the inheritance of the Almighty from on high? Is it not destruction for the wicked and disaster for the works of workers of iniquity? Does he not see my ways and count my steps? Those two, or those three verses I just read to you. Listen, here's the truth of it. If you'll be honest in the sight of your Lord and God, know that he reads you, your every thought and your intentions of your heart, you'll be better off in relationships. If we can be transparent, knowing that God knows our heart, knows our every thought, I try to, you know, when I'm harboring thoughts, I try to be honest, knowing that God knows those thoughts, that I'm not isolated in some way that God doesn't know. Because in that, then I really can't get away with wandering in the wrong direction. In verse 5, if I have walked with falsehood, or if my foot has hasten to deceit, let me be weighed on honest scales, that God may know my iniquity. If my step has turned from the way, or my heart walked after my eyes, or if any spot adheres to my hands, then let me sow and another eat. Yes, let my harvest be rooted out. The second thing here that Job lists as to the things that can trip a man up is deceit. Being deceitful, being dishonest. Job had never taken advantage of anyone that he had done business with. And that was really a good quality. He said that, you know, he used accurate scales and he was honest. And he would be even he wouldn't associate with those that were dishonest. He wouldn't even hang around some of those shakers and makers and movers of the time. He says in verse 9, if my heart had been enticed by a woman, or if I have lurked at my neighbor's door, then let my wife grind for another and let others bow down over her. For that would be wickedness. Yes, it would be iniquity deserving of judgment. For that would be a fire that consumes to destruction and would root out all my increase. The third thing here that can bring down a man is after looking at a woman, as she passes by and taking that second longing look of lust, that opens the door for the next step that is really attempting to satisfy that lust, that lustful desire. That's what he's saying here. Job had never lurked about to see when his neighbor's wife would be alone. he says. He didn't keep track of when his neighbor would leave for work and say, aha, my neighbor's wife is all alone, so I'll just go over there and I'll just see if I can borrow a cup of sugar from her with adultery on his mind. He said, I'm clean that way. I'm pure in that way. I didn't do that. You know, he's saying if he was guilty, then he was willing for his own wife, nice guy here, to become another man's slave and mistress. So he was pretty sure that he was not caught up in this, I hope anyway. Adultery is a horrible crime that brings shameful and painful consequences in this life and judgment in the next, if not repented of. If I have despised the cause of my male or female servant when they complained against me, what then shall I do when God rises up? When he punishes me, how shall I answer him? Did not he who made me in the womb make them? Did not the same one fashion us in the womb? This speaks to the feeling of being superior over other people, thinking that you're better than them. Paul explains in Philippians chapter 2 there, he tells us what kind of mindset us Christians should have, one of humility. If I kept in mind that every person that I come into contact with, every person that I speak to or come in contact with, if I will look at that woman or man with the thoughts that, you know what? This person has something in their life that is far better than me in any way. They are gifted in a way that I can't compare to. That would bring kind of a mindset of humility within me. We need to relate to people outside of pride, putting away pride. In verse 16, if I have kept the poor from their desire, or caused the eyes of the widow to fail, or eaten my morsels by myself, so that the fatherless could not eat of it. But from my youth I reared him as a father, and from my mother's womb I guided the widow. If I have seen anyone perish for lack of clothing, or any poor man without covering, if his heart has not blessed me, and if he has not warmed with the fleece of my sheep. If I have raised my hand against the fatherless when I saw and I had help in the gate, then let my arm fall from my shoulder, let my arm be torn from the socket. For destruction from God is a terror to me, and because of his magnificence I cannot endure. Job saying that he gave to the poor, and he took care of the widows, and the orphans were cared for too. He stands before God, and he raises his arms, and he says, God, if I haven't done all these things, you can just rip my arm right off the socket. Because I love to live for you, he says. Verse 24, if I had gold, if I had made gold my hope, or said to find gold, you are my confidence. If I rejoice because my wealth was great and because my hand had gained much. If I have observed the sun when it shines, or the moon moving in brightness, so that my heart has been secretly enticed. And my mouth has kissed my hand. This also would be an iniquity deserving of judgment, for I would have denied God who is above. Here Job maintains his innocence regarding greed and idolatry. If I, notice a lot of eyes here, if I rejoiced at the destruction of him who hated me, or lift myself up when evil found him, indeed, I have not allowed my mouth to sin by asking for a curse on his soul. Job says that he didn't rejoice when his enemy stubbed his toe or had troubles. He was not spiteful. He didn't rejoice at the destruction of his enemy. In verse 31, if the men of my tent have not said, who is there that has not been satisfied with his meat? But no sojourner had to lodge in the street, for I have opened my doors to the traveler. Job was a hospitable man, he declares. He's saying he shared freely. He was kind even to strangers. Boy, he's got quite a report card. Verse 33, if I have covered my transgressions as Adam, by hiding my iniquity in my bosom, because I feared the great multitude and dreaded the contempt of families, so that I kept silent and did not go out of the door. You know, Job even is declaring that Adam, the first Adam, you know, Adam and Eve of the garden, he's saying, man, he went out and hid from God, but not me. I'm honest. I'm open to God. Wow. Verse 35, oh, that I had one to hear me. Here is my mark. Oh, that the Almighty would answer me, that my prosecutor had written a book. This is where we see Job's struggle with pride. He has told everybody how great a man he is, but not with a contrite and broken spirit. And that's the problem. He's in frustration, understandably. Don't mistake me. I have mercy for him. I have compassion and empathy for him, where he's at in life and what he has gone through. But what he is declaring here is out of frustration as to why God will not answer him. He says, here is my mark. He had covered all the bases. He had justified himself before God. I've done all these things, God. Why? I am demanding, God, answer me. He says, I deserve it. That's a very dangerous place. When we start demanding of God anything, no matter what condition we are in, God will speak to him. And when God speaks, Job will listen. Surely I would carry it on my shoulder, he says in verse 36, and bind it on me like a crown. Referring to the book again, that book that he wished the prosecutor had written, he believed it was God. If he would write the things down that was the problems in his life or the problems that God had seen in his life, then he would take heed and he'd correct it, he says. He says, if you'd only just written these things down, I could have taken care of it. But you won't speak to me, God. When we are called to believe by faith, if it's all written down, your life and what God is doing and how he's doing it, what he's taking you through, how he's developing you, would that really be faith? If you knew how it all was working out, would it be faith? It wouldn't. That's not faith. Faith is believing in those things that you've never seen. Trusting by the Holy Spirit that God's word is inerrant and true. Job is a man that in God's eyes was righteous, yes, but he was also a man that was struggling deeply with his own pride. We see it come out in this chapter. God will address it at the end of this book. But first, there's one young man that's got to get his say in. We're going to be introduced to him next week in chapter 32. Let's finish up 31 here. In verse 37, I would declare to him the number of my steps. Like a prince, I would approach him. If my land cries out against me, and its furrows weep together, if I have eaten its fruit without money, or caused its owner to lose their lives, then let thistles grow instead of wheat, and weeds instead of barley. The words of Job are ended. Job had completed his official demand. He had written it all down. He had declared it just like a trial. He had laid it out. This was his, what do they call it, a summation at the end of the trial when the lawyers get up and they stand before the jury. He had declared his official demand, and he had signed the document. Then he remembered one more area that he needed to have covered, his stewardship of the land that God had given him. Job treated the land as though it were a person. He cared for it. He loved the land. He says, I didn't abuse it. And if I did, well then let the weeds grow up in the place of good seed. I must have abused my garden because I sure have a lot of weeds. But you know, Job was a guy that was strong. You see his strength, even bearing in mind, he was close to death at this point and gone on for a long time with all these losses. We've seen how the young men even spit upon him, ridiculed him, mocked him, and he bore that with strength. But yet, his pride was the one thing that God is going to work on. There's no broken or contrite spirit that we see here as Job closes his speech to God. Knowing that God was out there somewhere. We'll see this new person come on the scene next week in chapter 32. Just before God starts to speak. I'm looking forward to God addressing Job and clearing some of these things up we've worked through throughout this book of Job.